First, here we have Jessica Lawless. And Jessica listens to alternative music, folk, indie, pop, rock, blues, some gospel, R&B, and rap. That's quite a list. She sings alto and hopes very much to learn to play the violin. Lots of music. And our second person is Susan Miller. And Susan, with her husband, Deepak, owns Soma Media Works and video live streams. She is an active member of the Worship Services Committee, as you could see today, and contributes to the Soul Matters and Simply Pray groups. Anne is a retired teacher, has been very active in Beacon for a long time, is now active in the choir, and she enjoys practicing Tai Chi and playing the ukulele. And Al Sather is a religious atheist with a doctorate in animal genetics and breeding and an interest in biological and cosmological evolution. So I give you our four speakers who are going to come up and give you some of their personal experience. Jess.
Good morning. Water humbles me. When I stand quietly, looking at a clear lake, like Alouette Lake, I almost always imagine being in it completely. This scares me. I feel the water surround me, cold and still, inexorable. In these fantasies, I can see everywhere at once from my position, calmly drowning. I see the sky, the stones beneath me in the clear lake. Though beautiful, its surface still is marble. I respect its power. Years ago, when I was living in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, I remember a moment on a long, hot hike up a mountainside when I needed water for my canteen. Sitting on a rock at the side of a small, fast-moving river, I put my hand and the bottle in, and I recall imagining the vivid feeling of being pulled away, helpless, into the cold water. Helpless, like I was in Connecticut, tubing one summer afternoon, and was tossed out into the river. And like I was later in California, thrilled and happy, only seconds earlier, playing in the waves. Pulled under, suddenly terrified for my life as I couldn't tell which way was up, which direction to move towards in order to inhale again, to survive. When I meditate, I want to feel the interconnectedness of all things. But everything always seems so different. These cedars and hemlocks are not the maples and oaks I grew up with in Connecticut. But in the wild, water is always the same to me. Always beautiful, whether stagnant, brown, and murky, or emerald green and violent with waves. It's always alive, awe-inspiring, and always indifferent to my existence.
I know when I'm in a wild place, I immediately feel it in my body. I relax instantly, fall into myself. It is something about the sound of the wind as it plays on the landscape, the air so sweet and fresh, the beauty of the textures, colors, and compositions all around. This sensitivity to wildness is the legacy of my childhood, growing up in a small town nestled in a bay on the Ottawa River. Here, nature was etched on my soul. When I stumbled onto the teachings of earth-based spiritual traditions, they struck a resounding chord. I don't pretend to have the deep spiritual knowledge of practitioners who use the tools of these traditions for healing themselves and the world, the ceremonies and rituals to touch the subtle energies that emanate from Mother Earth, from Grandfather Sun, the star nations and the winds that emanate from the four directions. But I believe strongly that those who do are deeply in touch with the divine energy of life and the universe, the mystery, and it is the mystery that draws me. I am grateful to have been able to attend a course in some of the rites, rituals, ceremonies, and healing tools of the Caro Indians of Peru a couple of years ago. It was there that I got a glimpse of their power. I had rich moments of enlightenment through journeying, a form of guided meditation, and through sand painting, chakra cleansing, illuminations, play, and fire ceremonies. The earth-based spiritual traditions across the world have, in my view, brilliantly sophisticated systems for developing personal internal harmony and harmony with all living things. I deeply respect these traditions, and they may very well be essential for all of us in forging the Earth's future in this most precarious of times.
One day, above Port Townsend, Washington, I had an amazing experience that changed my way of thinking about religious experiences. I was there at the Universalist Unitarian Leadership School at Fort Worden, which is a park, in a park above Port Townsend. Actually, David Hamilton was there too. We went down together. I remember it very well. We had a busy week learning about many things, about worship, sharing our experiences, and particularly our beliefs about the big religious questions, good and evil, God, and the profound mysteries of life and death. One afternoon, we had some free time. It was later in the week. And for a couple of I had a couple of hours, so I decided to go for a walk up the hill to see the old gun batteries of Fort Worden. They had been built early in the 20th century to protect the coast, but I believe they were never used in battle. I followed a path through the woods up the hill until I emerged out of the gloom of the woods onto the hilltop. Open, grassy, and filled with brilliant sunshine. The sky was blue. There was a gentle, warm breeze. Wildflowers were in bloom, and birds and bees flitting around. Far below, I could see the ocean sparkling in the sun, speckled with sailboats that looked like tiny toys from that height. It was so quiet and so peaceful. In the past, I had visited many interesting ruins in Europe, in Central America. I was always very impressed by them. And the beauty of the peace of the afternoon and those old battery ruins had a profound effect on me. I felt a presence was with me. It was nothing I could see or hear. It was just there with me. And I was filled with joy. I spent about an hour up there, but I was not alone. I had the company of that presence, whatever it was, and I was filled with incredible joy. That experience changed my thinking about the mysteries of life. I guess I got over a little of my skepticism. It was the closest experience of God that I've ever had, and it still lives in my heart.
Good morning. My spiritual journey starts from a simple premise. Homo sapiens is a storyteller. I base this on the simple observation that our homes are a library full of stories, of mythologies. It includes the pictures on the wall of family and friends, collected art reflecting our values and interests, books of family history, of community, our heritage. In the closet hangs not only our work clothes, but our ritual clothing, those special costumes reserved for Sunday morning, family and community celebrations, parties, tribal uniforms of our team colors, skates, skis, bats, and paddles, and the list goes on, showing who we are and what we are. Our home, workplace, and playground are the pages of our storybook that anthropologists like Joseph Campbell read and study, as well as those of peoples in faraway lands and from other ages long ago. He summarized his life work in The Power of Myth, a series of books and television interviews. And Starhawk, from our singing a living tradition, 517, so adaptly cautions that our spirituality comes from within oneself, for one's inner self. And she writes, "And you who seek to know me, know that your seeking and yearning will avail you not, unless you know the mystery. For that which you seek, you find not within yourself, you will never find it without." Similarly, Bill Wilson, a Haida chief, knew well the power of myth, of story. In an interview with Peter Grotsky, host of Morningside, he was asked, "Do you believe those legends that we have been talking about this morning?" And Bill's response was, "Oh no, they are foolish Indian stories. But understanding them is what makes me Haida." In Masks of the Universe, Edward Harrison, professor of physics and cosmology at the University of Arizona, wrote, "Where there is a society of human beings, however primitive, there we find a universe. And where there is a universe of whatever kind, then we find a society. Both go together. The one does not exist without the other. A universe unifies a society, enabling its members to communicate and share their thoughts and experiences. A universe might not be rational by our standards or those standards of other societies, but is always rational by the standards of its own society. Our universe, the universe in which we live or think or live, is the modern physical universe." And he continues, "As society evolves, its universe also develops and evolves. Then, within an ace of understanding everything, the old universe dissolves in a finite of social upheaval, and a new universe emerges, full of promise and exciting challenge. Universes rise, flourish for a decade, a century, a millennium, and decline. They decline because of the assault of an alien culture, or revolutionary ideas refuse to remain suppressed, or old problems reappear and take center stage, or for no other reason than the climate of opinion changes." And this is why I turn to science. Its understanding is dynamic, ever-changing, growing, and challenging, stimulating my seeking of spiritual meaning. It is the understanding of the knowledge of the processes of how our universe flows and unwinds that help us answer the age-old questions of the meaning of life. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? As posed by the artist Paul Gauguin. To close, Albert Einstein wrote, "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind.